the Lonely Office, your playbook for navigating the messy line between work and life. Our topics are sourced from real, anonymous workplace conversations happening within Glassdoor communities. From bosses that hold you back to promotions that you don't even want, we discuss timely work-life issues so you don't have to brave the professional world alone.
Leah, you're a TikTok influencer. The TikTok ban is all over the news.
Yes and no. I've got some complex feelings about it that I'm actually afraid to share on TikTok because I don't think they would be popular.
Well, I think it's actually a complex situation for our hero, Harold.
As well.
You ready for this one? Buckle up. So Harold is what you would call a model citizen of indifference and apathy at his job.
Okay.
Now, this all started when he graduated at the height of the pandemic. He got his first job offer, but then his employer backs out of the offer.
Ugh.
The company cited dismal economic conditions, only to see that 6 months later, the stock market hits an all-time high.
Oh.
Harold's thinking, dismal economy? Really? So this guy struggles to find a job for 1 year. And when he finally does, he realizes that his pay is 15% below his other coworkers at his level. He lives in Cleveland, Ohio, apparently a tier two city, where the cost of living was said to be lower than the New Yorks and the San Franciscos of the world. He's thinking, really? I just paid $8 for a carton of eggs. I don't care what tier this is. What is going on in the world? Guys, it gets worse for Harold. The first vacation request he made was turned down by his manager. The 1 week he asked for, Harold's only asking for 1 week, was, quote, too long and no other support was around to do his role. But I thought our policy was unlimited PTO, Harold said. What happened to the unlimited? At that point, Harold was broken. He's broken down by unfulfilled promises from his employer. So he quietly quits. We're familiar with this, the phenomenon where you don't officially quit, but you just avoid real work at all costs.
Come in at 10 a.m. and leave at 5.
That's right. And Harold never turns back. Worse than that, and I'm being serious here for a second, his disillusionment, it crept into the other parts of his life. He never voted. He never volunteered and generally lived what one would call a disenchanted life. But then something happened. One morning, while scrolling his TikTok feed, the one thing that brought Harold some comfort and distraction, he reads news about an impending ban on the platform. The congresswoman in his own district was supporting the ban too. In that moment, Harold felt a force rise from within him that he hadn't experienced since getting into college. He was impassioned like never before. Harold leaps into action. He joins a Reddit group of supporters. He volunteered for the ACLU, and he contacts his congresswoman to protest the ban. For Harold, this was the straw that broke the camel's back. They've gone too far this time, Harold said out loud, alone in his apartment. Enough is enough!
This poor guy.
Oh, man. These get better and better.
I went full Al Pacino on that one. Well, a tough start, right, Matt, for Harold? Tough start.
Very tough start for Harold into corporate America and his job. It's really easy to read Harold's story cynically as maybe apathy amongst a swathe of youth now finding a cause in TikTok survival as a cause worth fighting for. But I think a more honest, pragmatic take addresses some of the other elements in his story, right? Like, how many times was he promised something only for it to be taken away or interpreted in a different way than it was sold? By some accounts, teenagers spend an average of 2 hours a day on TikTok, while adult users, skewing maybe 20 to 35-year-olds, spend almost an hour. Most of us have experienced the TikTok algorithm and its uncanny ability to bring us videos and content that we don't necessarily think we should watch, but that we yearn to. Now, the dark side of that experience is endlessly scrolling through mindless but entertaining stuff that it feeds us. For me, that would be prank videos. I absolutely love them. The meaner, the better. And TikTok knows that. all too well.
I know this about
I hate them.
It's a dark side of Matt.
But within that experience of no filters, an algorithm gone wild, controlled by an entity we don't exactly know, another experience emerges. And for this one, you have to actually speak to teenagers and younger users to get at it. Here's a comment from a community post that does this. The government attempting to ban TikTok again is probably the dumbest thing they could do. I don't think it's about protecting us or our privacy from China. It's about the fact that we keep receiving factual information before they have a chance to control the narrative.
Oh, give me a break.
Thousands of people are waking up from the chokehold the American media has had on us for decades, and it's scaring them. They don't want us to know anything about Gaza or the prison labor strike. If they ban it, people are going to be even angrier than they already are. It's just drawing attention to the fact that they don't want us to know anything. So, you know, that post was not written by Harold, but it might just as well have been. For Harold or this poster, there's a matter of interpretation, once again, at odds between different generations of Americans. Your job offer can be revoked. Salary equity stops at the city you live in, and the names of corporate policies are just names. Make sure to read the terms and conditions. And now, some social media are worse than others because they're owned by foreign adversaries, not because the content is too unfiltered or outside the bounds of policy. I think that's the perspective, reading through many of the posts we have in community amongst young professional workers, that they tend to have. And I think it's misinterpreted, or it's a difference of opinion or difference of interpretations yet again. So to kick this off, there's a generational rift. That's kind of an ongoing theme of the TLO of this show, right?
Yeah.
And here too, another landmark moment in, I guess, political and economic times, there's this major application that services adults and kids. I think it's like 150 million Americans are on TikTok. So what's your take driving this divergence of opinion on TikTok between generations?
Leah, I think you're the perfect person to start with this.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's a lot of pressure, guys.
Maybe our new listeners who aren't necessarily familiar, Leah is a TikTok influencer, hundreds of thousands of followers, early user. And so she actually has some real skin in the game on this one, I think.
So I had sort of accidentally gained 150 or more than 150,000 followers on TikTok. And I think Aaron asked me at some point how many views I have on TikTok. I don't exactly know, but I've got a spreadsheet and it's over 200 million, which is insane.
That's more than many shows on Netflix and Hulu.
Well, that's what makes my opinion about this more complicated, is that I'm not necessarily a subject matter expert in a lot of the things that I talk about on TikTok. And people see my videos. And in contrast, I went to see my cousin speak yesterday. He is a science journalist, and he will spend months researching a topic and then have an article printed in the New York Times. Whereas I just think about something, 30 seconds later, I'm posting a video, people are agreeing, people are sharing it, people are talking to their friends about it as though they read it in the New York Times. That is a little scary. And when you factor in the being owned by a political adversary part, it's a little bit scary. But I love TikTok. And I was telling Aaron earlier, I'm probably addicted to TikTok. And so if I'm being genuine, part of me was like, maybe it would be a relief to just go cold turkey away from my TikTok addiction. But I mean, obviously a lot of people's jobs and livelihoods depend on TikTok and just the joy that it brings to their lives. So it's a complicated issue. I forgot the question.
The question, just to kind of go back, was what's your take driving some of the generational difference of opinion on TikTok?
Oh, the generational rift. I do think a lot of us, people our age, received a lot of education about reputable sources. And the people on this podcast right now understand the algorithm and how it's feeding you what you want to hear. And you're getting a lot of more of the same. And I do feel like some education about that is lacking with the younger generation. They talk about it, and I'm talking as someone who has a teenager. They think they know,
right?
But they don't necessarily know.
How about your perspective as a content creator, where I don't think you've monetized your viewership yet, or maybe you have.
I have.
And that, okay, great. Is it that the younger generation has been savvier in latching onto this platform, growing an audience, monetizing it, and they have actually some economic skin in the game as opposed to the older generation? And how does that influence your own perspective on it, given that's kind of the case with your account too?
So yeah, a lot of people have monetized it and they now depend on that monetization, and it would be awful for them if it was take it away. Though this is not a blanket ban. It's an attempted forced sale. But anyway, I do think that they feel that older people don't understand TikTok, that they think, oh, it's just, you're just watching teenagers dance. There are really relevant and important conversations happening on TikTok every day. And it's up to you as the user to sort of sort through that, to verify, to check the sources, to get your own information. Yeah, I know. It's hard, Aaron. I'm lucky enough to have my actual marketing background to fall back on. It's not as scary for me, but I understand that that's not true for everyone.
Yeah, I'm going to push on this because I think it's valuable for the audience. So if you didn't have that other job, the daytime job, right? And in fact, your income was really tied to this, would that make you a little more pro or against the ban?
Yeah, no, it definitely would. And I think for a lot of moms in particular, TikTok and social media is a way for them to work and make money while still having a flexible schedule and time to spend with their families and taking care of their kids. It's a big problem in the United States, childcare and maternity leave and flexible schedules. And social media has given a lot of people a way to do that.
Yeah. So the name of the bill that's been passed by the House, and I think it's yet to go through the Senate, it's HR 7521, Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. I think it's important we mention the name of the act. And if you actually read the bill, I'm just going to read the first sentence here because I think it's important too for the context. This bill prohibits distributing, maintaining, and providing internet hosting services for a foreign adversary controlled application. And they spell it specifically TikTok here. However, the prohibition does not apply to a covered application that executes a qualified divestiture as determined by the president. This was the point you were making, Leah, that this may not be a ban if it does in fact get sold to an American company. But I think a lot of the pundits out there are expecting this not to be sold, namely because China is probably not going to greenlight that. And so the end result will be a ban, right? The app platforms will have to close that down.
Let me, for the moment, talk about my age in the sense that I'm an elder millennial. But let me, for the sake of argument, can take sort of the boomer viewpoint here. I'm willing to take the hate mail. One of the pieces that I think causes this divide, what you talked about, Leah, we had things like bibliographies, footnotes, and citations. These were really important from a journalistic standpoint. I think that people who are of an older generation are suspicious, rightfully so, of platforms like this because of that sort of invisible hand you were talking about, Matt, this algorithmic feed. Leah, you just mentioned, yeah, you can customize it, but I got to tell you, I've messed around with all these platforms purely from a marketing tool perspective for my own podcast and storytelling, and it's really hard. Like I always, every single day have to say like, please don't show me this. Please don't show me this. Please don't show me this. And there's stuff that keeps coming back in. It's not like I'm watching prank videos like Matt and it just keeps giving me what I want. I'm saying, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see the guy get punched in the face. I don't want violence in my feed. This stuff is happening organically and it's being pushed. This invisible hand, I think this is the issue. There's a swath of accounts that are getting just a fragment of truth, or it's manipulated because of context, or the video is being doctored, and now you put in AI. There is, without that intermediary that poster said, which is like, they're just trying to cover the truth. That's not truth. Right. That's just opinion.
But that's true across all social media.
It's not just TikTok.
I think that's fair.
I think the concern with TikTok is that it's acting as a news source that is owned by a foreign adversary. And data collection and stealing your data and abusing that is also across all of the internet.
Right.
Totally. It's not just social media, it's everywhere.
Reading through some of these comments, there's a sort of open-eyed, maybe you can call it cynical nature, but we just heard Harold's story and he had a reason to be cynical based on the experiences he had. I'm going to read one of these posts. Do you support a U.S. ban on TikTok? Why or why not? Look, we don't want China harvesting our information. We want American companies to do that and then sell it to China. It's called economics. I think the generation boomers and others are pointing towards and saying, hey, well, you don't understand that this is an adversary. The CCP does not have the interests of Americans, let alone their own citizens. And we'll speak to the stories of Jack Ma being essentially abducted and then coming back looking frail and had to divest from Ant. And in certain provinces in China, there's a form of ethnic cleansing happening. And so like, there's plenty of ways you can kind of point at that regime and say, okay, there's issues there. The younger generation, they're not denying that, but it's almost like they're more open-eyed. Their own take is that ultimately, even if China may have its thumb on this, is it any better though, what's already happening in American companies? And I think furthermore, their point of view may be that just because there's a potential for some of this data to be used, there's ownership by China. Just because you can see the smoke doesn't mean the fire. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
When China banned Facebook, we were all like, my God, what a freedom of speech violation. They're blocking all of these websites. They don't want people to share information. Everyone on this podcast heavily judged China for doing that. So then how can we look at ourselves when we do the same thing? I'm obviously completely contradicting myself from earlier, but there is a huge freedom of speech question.
Aaron, you made the point about bibliography and our generation, maybe Gen X. And I recall that, right? Like, you get a Dr. Holdren or two if your bibliography was not to T, right?
Yeah.
And so you had Zaid, you know, who's kind of Gen Z editorial researcher for the show. He made the point that I think one of the appeals of TikTok is that it's a video. And so there's not naivete that video can't be doctored, right? Particularly in our times of now, like AI generated video. That said, it's a lot harder, at least with the current technology, to doctor videos, for example, to manipulate opinion than cite different sources. And the truthfulness of text or incidents happening historically, you know, based on a tweet you read. Now the platform that's kind of like sharing us real video in areas that we otherwise wouldn't see on major networks in the US.
So I want to push back on that a little bit. There are clear differences, and we know this, between the Chinese TikTok and the US TikTok. And you can look at it on one end where like, oh, they're suppressing free speech. I think they call it online content conductive to the healthy growth of minors is what the Chinese government calls it. On one hand, you could say like, oh, that's just propaganda. Regardless if it's destruction of free speech or not, the fact of the matter is that Chinese kids are experiencing a different type of TikTok with more educational content than American kids. Yeah. And what makes it even worse is it's Chinese owned. I can understand the suspicion. This sounds to me like social warfare. Now you could say, well, American value says bring it all in. And you know, you can't legislate that. That's a home decision. Those are private decisions with private platforms. But I do think to your point with Z, who is awesome, the one thing I told him offline as well, and just my side, maybe coming from the boomer side, is yes, it's video. At the same time, I think we all know the reason why they asked us to cite sources. You know, as a short storyteller, I know that I can tell a parable of emotional truth in a short period of time. But the reality is, real truth, objective truth, is a very long, complicated story. And a 10-second video cannot do that. Here's the boomer. People don't want to read 50 chapters. They don't want to sit in the conference for 3 hours and listen to the theological debate between Sam Harris and some bishop. Right. They don't want to do it. They want it in 10 seconds. Can we have the same attention span as literary farmers who attended three-hour Lincoln-Douglas debates? And farmers from Indiana.
It's a high bar. Big request.
Farmers from Indiana, Matt. Hey, I just want to interrupt really quick. If you're enjoying this show, please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. Just takes
Aaron, yeah. That's asking too much. It's just
a couple seconds. Okay. Just a couple seconds. Literally two. It actually takes less time than me saying this right now.
5-star rating.
Five-star rating. And listen, we couldn't do this without your support, sincerely. All right, let's get back to it.
I got it. Let me read another post here from the Gloucester community. So this one, we don't need a ban on TikTok. We need stronger regulations on data ownership and sharing. Feels like Congress is merely focusing on the symptom instead of the problem. Because today it's TikTok. Tomorrow, it could be Google posing a threat of data misuse. The other perspective here is that, look, I don't think anyone denies TikTok as a platform, even if it's not owned by China, frankly, as a platform optimizing its profit. You know, we saw how that worked out for Facebook until there was regulation or threat of regulation. It's going to put in front of you whatever it needs to put in front of you to get a click and have you spend as long period as you can. And I had the personal experience. I actually recall when I first started using it, I was frustrated as hell for this. I'm in my early 40s, right? I like to think, you know, I don't have a reptilian brain where I just like jump at sexual content. But I swear to you, I would click on links from friends shared to me, TikTok links about certain topics that had nothing to do with sexual material. And TikTok inserts like this 2-second blip of some bikini clad woman or some like weird shit.
What?
Consistently, yes. No matter what link I would select, it would always interject this like ridiculous clip. Like
swipe up. From.
Yeah. And it was like, it was trying to insert some subliminal message of like, oh, you know, maybe I can get more of that outrageous material afterwards. That was my earliest experience with it. So I'm the last one to trust that platform, its algorithm. And I think a lot of the public research has actually shown the point about the content divide being more educationally bet for China-based citizens versus American citizens. That all being said, I think the concern about free speech is a legitimate one, particularly when we're going through about of platforms regulating their content in a more heavier way. You know, there's a lot of Republicans complaining initially about the content filtering happening in Twitter and in Facebook, and then you have liberals complaining. And so like there's a chokehold, there's a squeeze happening with content Americans don't trust the American platforms to necessarily allow them to view the content that falls outside whatever PC or agenda that they have. And so they look elsewhere. And usually when you look elsewhere, you read international. I know when I read news articles, I know I can go ahead and read a news article from a British source, from a UAE source, Al Jazeera, a Ukrainian news source. I can go out and read it. And when I can't, I can simply put on, you know, my VPN and access that. I think that's the feeling here for these video-based platforms, is that this is another source of news that now I don't have, like when you go beyond just the outrageous videos.
I think the issue is that it's multi-layered. Obviously, we have the freedom of speech issue, which is huge. We also have the social media. Teenagers spend 8 hours a day on average or something like that on screens in general. So just rotting everyone's brains. And then on top of that, the news source we trust, because you're not saying that you're turning to the Financial Times. We're turning to China, which is a government that's known for oppressing free speech. I also have a good friend who's Chinese that I met in London. And when she moved to the UK, she was arguing with her friends about what happened in Tiananmen Square and was floored when she saw video and learned what actually happened.
There you
go. She absolutely had no idea.
Do we think as American citizens, it is quite possible that there are versions of historical incidents and events that have not necessarily been openly shared, and that we know that's fact, partially because we live in a democratic society. Mm-hmm. The CIA itself and its archives, after enough time passes, will release stuff. And you're like, oh shit, that's really what happened? What's the expression? The cleanest, dirtiest undergarments or underwear. Like, of all societies, democracy in the US is probably the best, because you eventually get some of the sources of truth.
Never heard that expression.
But okay, the point I wanted to set you up with, Aaron, is you made mention of TikTok in China. There's a lot of reasons to be suspicious here, given the history of CCP in China. That said, the bill is pretty open in interpretation to determine who is a foreign adversary. A social media company that's controlled by a foreign adversary and has been determined by the president to present a significant threat to national security. That gives kind of a carte blanche for Congress, the president, potentially choose. Today, it may be China. We know historically, if you just look in recent history, there was a time where, I guess, Saudi Arabia, that killing of Khashoggi, the journalist, right? They could have been labeled that. And now it seems like we cozied up with them again. If you take this policy too openly at the whims of Congress, it's a little questionable as to who they choose is the foreign adversary. And all of a sudden, applications can be cut off.
Are congressmen and women the right people to be making this decision? Obviously, I believe in government. But like a lot of them, when they're speaking, you can tell they have almost no interaction with public. That's why Jeff Jackson, actually, out of North Carolina, who's very popular on TikTok, I've been interested watching his videos and his take, because he voted for the bill, but he's a huge TikTok user and he's benefited from it greatly.
They all voted for the bill. It was a bipartisan. Yeah. And that's what's surprising here. I think we mentioned a few times on the show, like, we wish we were read in with these congressmen on what they knew.
Well, they're talking about making it public.
You could probably guess an element of what they were read in on. Anybody who's developed an app, who has any experience kind of developing apps on the app stores, know what permissions these apps are provided. And we mentioned specifically on the show before, you know, the microphone permission is a sensitive permission. And the ability for these apps to kind of surveil and monitor your audio on your phone in the background, we know that's present. That's doable. I assume what they were read in on was likely 160 million Americans. They could be surveilled. That's the point. And it's the potential for misuse, I think, that's driving this. But back to the user's post, why not regulate the platforms? Why not go to Apple and Google and ask for those APIs to be reconfigured so that the permissions that allow these third-party developers to have, like, permanent access to the microphone that provides them the ability to surveil is revoked? What's being chosen here is basically, let's just have this live within the confines of an American company. Because if it is, then the Congress knows, and, you know, our government knows, they have more purview on it. But also through back doors, which we know exist too, because there's NSA leaks about that as well. It's public record.
We're actually embodying the generational divide here, which is kind of cool. This idea that these microphones and they're listening. And by the way, there's truth to that. People don't want to look in the mirror and say, I've consented to this. Just because it's part of our lives, it didn't make you join. No one made you join TikTok and get surveilled.
We made this argument a lot on the show. I don't know if I buy it in 100% of the cases, particularly this case, because users don't necessarily know. They're not sophisticated enough to know that if they give their microphone permission, they're providing almost permanent access for that third-party developer to surveil. And then as a result of surveilling, getting this information to retarget them with ads, and then, you know, God knows.
Especially what. Children.
There are states like Florida who are introducing age-based restrictions on social media. I know in my friend circle, none of them allow mobile phones for their kids until they're 15 years old. And none of them allow social media until they're like 16 years old. And so, like, those are different considerations. If you want to regulate social media, because social media has been, in some cases, clinically proven to have adverse effects on depression and even mortality with suicides, then regulate social media. But what's going on here TikTok is just another discussion. TikTok is just another social media platform. Yeah. Seems here like the desire is to regulate foreign misuse of American data. But the younger generation read here is like, they understand the concern. Can we even trust in the first place proper use of this data by American companies? The younger generation sees it that way, where like they know the CCP, they're not ignorant.
They
it's
know
not
it.
Like the caricatures that are painted of them, that they don't follow politics. No, they know all this stuff, but they also know that the government doesn't always do what's in the best interest of citizens. The Patriot Act is an example of that. They surpassed their legal boundaries considerably with that act. The benefit of the doubt isn't given to some of those younger users on TikTok.
These conversations we know are happening in Slack channels and in person. Does that seem to be spilling over in your world?
Most of my friends who are fathers or mothers, they all down the line agree, ban it. There's a lack of depth with the thinking.
Oh, yours is on the other side. You're saying they're saying ban it.
Okay. Yeah, I think the easy choice here, if you're a parent, is like the 60s, don't listen to rock and roll, right? Like, okay, it's a bad analogy. But my point is that my point is that it's really easy as a parent to say, hey, let's not expose them to it. But that's why I think why we wanted to have the show is that there is a certain sophistication depth that the youth is actually considering when they're against the ban or they're supporting TikTok in this realm. It doesn't make them supporters of the CCP or ignorant of the larger political dynamics at play.
But I also think parents are saying that and feeling that way because we ourselves are like, I am addicted to my phone. I feel that it is hard for me to separate from my phone, from social media. I'm on my phone all the time and I didn't get a smartphone until I was in my 20s. What does that mean for my kids? Anything we can do to sort of help them not turn into what we've all become,
right?
With our short attention spans and our phone and social media addictions. Like if someone came into my life and was like, no more TikTok or even no more smartphone for you, I would be upset. But in a weird way, I'd be like, huh, what am I going to do with my time now?
You articulate it so well because I have one engineer in my friend circle and he's gone as far as setting up his own privately owned servers for his home, where he filters all the content coming from the open internet. And that's just like the hyper-vigilant extreme of that. But if you think about it, is even in the dial-up era that we lived through, right, the late 90s, we had access to all that stuff. Sure. We had all access to all those freaky Yahoo forums and GeoCities groups and like
some
really weird conversations there.
We're all still scarred for life.
Are we going out of our way to not expose them to elements that we were exposed to even in like a prehistoric era of the internet?
The key feature there, Matt, I don't have proof, but my gut instinct is telling me, Leah's point earlier, is when that exposure occurred. They were born in their hands.
Getting back to Harold, is that this has reignited a passion in him. And so many people, 175 million people in this country are passionate about TikTok. 175 million citizens being passionate about something and engaged with something is significant.
And so I think many ways, Aaron, your take that all the ills of social media and mobile phones are being projected onto TikTok in many ways that Facebook was complaining about just 2 years
ago.
How happy is Facebook now? But let's keep in mind that the ills that you're bringing up, and I think it's a very salient argument because it's a social media ill, it's a mobile phone ill, it's not just TikTok. Now it's being bottled at TikTok, say, oh, this is going to be solved if we ban TikTok. It's not going to be solved. Those ills won't be solved. And I think that's the point of some of these younger users who are saying, hey, look, the only argument against TikTok right now is some of the undue influence of a third-party foreign adversary. That's it. When it comes to that one argument, maybe that's fear-mongering. That's the perspective. And it's just a red herring for what really is controlling the narrative. I'm not projecting that point of view. I'm just saying that is the point of view of some of the younger generation.
I don't know if everyone remembers a few years ago when a lot of advertisers pulled off of Meta because of Cambridge Analytica and all of the conversation around the way Facebook and Instagram were using customer data and abusing customer data. This is definitely going to be a conversation in marketing circles. It's such a complex issue, and there are people on all sides with very strong opinions.
Let's say bills passed, ByteDance refuses to sell because it's pressured by China not to sell. Platforms block it. What happens with your scenario and your account TikTok, and how does it impact you?
Are you joining Harold on the picket line?
Am I joining Harold on the picket line? This is just going to make Mark Zuckerberg happy. I would probably shift a lot of my focus either to Reels or YouTube Shorts. I have a little bit of a base on Instagram. I don't think TikTok will be fully banned in the United States, but maybe I'm being naive. Businesses, small businesses, that's how they sell their products, through TikTok Shop, which is a whole nother conversation. It impacts a lot of people, not just sort of like, get ready with me while I talk about how I was bullied by a high schooler.
It's unlikely that it gets banned. What ends up happening, my humble opinion, is regulation does get introduced or pressure does get exerted on the platforms, have some of these vulnerabilities that allow surveillance to happen.
Yeah.
And because I really think that's what it is. I don't think it's just like you're collecting the habits of these users and whatnot. I think it has to do with surveillance more than anything else.
Is it going to cause more of a generational divide? Or do you think people just kind of just let it go and just say, hey, let's go to work and then have our own opinions and our own?
Well, the irony of the whole thing is, you know, I don't think the ban, being pro-ban or anti-ban, is the generational divide. I think the divide is the interpretation of what the value is. And the fact that the older generation thinks it's just as a lark, it's entertainment, and, you know, you're apathetic and, you know, go get a job. Or that's such a lens of the older generation prism. And that's the misinterpretation. That's the divide. The younger generation is like, F that. That's not what this is about, right? And so from that vantage point, if it actually does get banned, it just douses gasoline on the fire. And to be modest, but I do think a lot of folks will be disappointed.
Harold cared so much about TikTok, he decided to drop his phone and go to a community. This sort of frustration about this digital space that's threatened puts him on the front picket lines with folks at the ACLU. Here's Harold now. Who knows what his story could be? He could be one of the most preeminent free speech advocates in America.
There's a lot of other things to be upset about, so.
Hey, you made it. Thanks for tuning in to The Lonely Office. If you like what you heard, follow us on all major podcast platforms so you don't miss an episode. And make sure and tap 5 stars and leave a review. I know everyone says it, but it actually helps others like you discover the show. Remember, the topics you hear us talk about on the show are sourced from Glassdoor communities, where professionals are having candid conversations about their careers anonymously with others in their industry. To be part of that conversation, download the Glassdoor app. And when you're in the app, make sure and join the Lonely Office Bowl. That's where we are. When you're there, you can suggest a topic idea or an episode idea, or you can make it more formal and email us at thelonelyoffice@glassdoor.com. We'll catch you next time.